Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford, sitting alongside the one and only Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, a little more follow-up here to the Packers' 23-16 victory over the Bears in Chicago on Sunday. We heard from Mike McCarthy on Monday, his usual day-after game review. And the biggest message I got out of that was really how proud Mike McCarthy and this coaching staff was of how the Packers won the battle in the trenches. And when you're going up against an opponent that actually has the better reputation for running the ball and for playing tougher defense than the reputation that the Packers have, and you outrush them by over 100 yards, that really says something about what your offensive and defensive lines did.
The number one line I love from the story that you wrote about this is his capture the line of scrimmage line. I thought that was such a cool way to say it.
Yep.
Because really, if you think about it, Michael, you break it down, football at its core is about capturing the line of scrimmage. It's like capture the flag. I mean, that's where everything is dictated. Momentum, rhythm, timing, points, production. Everything starts there, and I thought that was a really accurate assessment. When you go back and look at this game, when you rewatch it and see the TV copy, film, whatever you want, the Packers dictated those 2 to 3 yards within the line of scrimmage. Defensively, I thought one of the reasons, Blake Martinez only had 2 tackles in this game. I think one of the reasons for that is just they were just so active on the defensive line.
Yeah, he didn't have to make all those tackles from the linebacker spot because the guys up front were in there.
I think Mike Daniels had 6 tackles. It looked like Kenny Clark, I think, had 5. The outside backers were active. The cornerbacks were getting involved. That's why I said in Insider Inbacks, I felt like this was the quintessential team victory because it wasn't one guy. Mike McCarthy wanted people to step up, and they stepped up across the board.
Yeah, and one guy that he pointed out, which is a player that he's talked about in the past with the role that he's had, we've talked about him on the show, and that's Justin McCray, the man who's becoming the versatile backup offensive lineman. He steps in for Brian Bulaga at right tackle, and not just having to play tackle once again as a guy for a guy who's naturally an interior offensive lineman, but his assignment is Leonard Floyd, a pass rusher, a speedy edge rusher who had 5 sacks coming in on the game. I did my little what you might have missed video thing in looking at how the Packers handled both Akeem Hicks and Leonard Floyd, who lined up next to each other, which put the bulk of the duties of blocking them on Jari Evans, the veteran, and then the young guy, Justin McCray, on the right side of the Packers offensive line. And, when Hicks and Floyd come into the game with 12 combined sacks on the year and they leave with just a half sack on the stat sheet collectively against you, that's a pretty good day's work.
I think, the Packers hand out a number of awards at the end of the season. They have their Rookie of the Year awards. You have your MVP. A lot of that stuff happens, I think, at the Packers Hall of Fame banquet each year. I think Justin McCray, you can make a really concerted effort for Unsung Hero Award. I love this guy's story.
Yeah.
And I've talked about it on the show before. I've obviously written about it too, but this doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah.
That you have a guy that was completely out of football. Him and his brother are working at the Westgate Hotel in Orlando between, doing different assignments there, playing in the Arena Football League for the Orlando Predators, just trying to keep that NFL dream alive. They basically beg the staff at UCF to allow them to work out once more at their rookie or the upcoming pro day.
Yeah, the pro day workout.
Lonzo Highsmith finds him. This guy spends the entire offseason learning the center position. They weren't even talking about right tackle, and that ends up being where he's now starting and has played a lot this season with some of the injuries to Brian Bulaga. It is the Packers' version of Rudy. It truly is. I mean, this guy was out of the NFL, Mike. For him to even be on this team, let alone contributing the way he has, is remarkable.
Yeah, it definitely is. And when you look at the fact that that he was thrown into the tackle spot, he's actually played a little bit at both tackle spots, really in the emergency situation. But the fact that now the way he has played there, and Brian Bulaga is out for the season, he's out long term. Justin McCray, I think, is the guy there for the rest of the season. It may have been on a trial basis initially, but based on what's on the film, and you look at what he did against a guy like Leonard Floyd, a top 10 draft pick just a little over a year ago for the Chicago Bears, No, it wasn't perfect. You know, Floyd did get in there a couple times. Floyd did have a half a sack. But you take that effort against a guy who is a potentially disruptive defender, you know, with your young quarterback there. The Packers will take that from Justin McCray every week.
And I included this in the Insider Inbox that I wrote on Tuesday, in that it is amazing to me that this hasn't been a bigger narrative this year in the media with the Packers' offensive line issues. The fact that every single week we're not talking about this speaks to the fact of the guys that have been healthy and have been able to stay out there, the job they've done, but also McCray moving around, also a guy like Lucas Patrick being called upon, Lane Taylor playing multitude of different positions. That's not easy. And I thought one of the commenters made a great point. You look at what happened with Chaz Green in Dallas last week.
Yeah.
When he had to sub in there, and how quickly that can fall apart.
Yeah.
It is really a testament to that group, James Camp and everybody across the board, that they've been able to really function despite not having David Bakhtiari for four games, and then, you know, having Brian Bulaga, losing him, and then him being gone now for the season.
Yeah, hats off to all those guys for sure. And I was really impressed when I turned on the film, just watching how the Packers handled Akeem Hicks, big guy, 6'5", 330 pounds, 7 sacks on the season coming in. Really quiet day for a guy who's been a big impact defender for Chicago.
And they quietly ran for 160 rushing yards. Again, it was across the board what they were able to do, both against the pass and the run. It was one of the underlying reasons for that victory.
Yeah, the mixture of the veterans with the young guys. You got Jari Evans, you got David Bakhtiari, Corey Linsley, we talked about McCray and Lane Taylor. It's becoming an interesting mix, but they're making it work. With that, we'll go to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, one area we didn't touch on or haven't touched on yet with regards to our review of the Bears game, that's the Packers special teams. And there are some issues that I want to get to, but I want to point out first that for all the talk about Jamal Williams and the tremendous game he had running the ball in the second half for the Packers, lo and behold, he gets a game ball from the coaching staff for his work on special teams. You turn on the film, this guy is becoming quite the player on kickoff cover, I think, is where he really starts to stand out. And now, presumably, his opportunities in that area are going to diminish as he needs to run the ball more, given the injuries at running back. But this is a young player really starting to make a name for himself, not just as a running back.
Yeah, and if you actually go to any Packer games, keep an eye on him on the kickoff return unit. He's pretty entertaining to watch. It kind of reminds me in a way, you remember a couple years ago, I think it was like Chris Banjo and Jeff Janis, they started doing the thing where they'd get the crowd into,
they'd
like kind of
rev
the
music
up
and everything
after kickoff coverage, because 90% of the time it's just being a touchback anyway, and they try to get them into it before the defense comes onto the field. Jamal Williams is kind of doing that a little bit with some of his dance moves when he's back in the posse as a blocker. Aside from that, getting to your original point, yeah, it's amazing when you see those guys who haven't played special teams much in college. I mean, he was the all-time leading running back at BYU, played 5 years there. They weren't asking him to play special teams very often.
Right.
But yet when he's on kickoff coverage, did an exemplary job, but you did a great job of pointing out that play in specific, the one where he came down. Kind of gets washed out a little bit, but the second effort coming back and tackling Tarik Cohen, a credit to him. And then, as it just so happens, in this particular game, the second time they're playing the Bears, after he had his first chance against them in September, he ends up having 20 second-half carries, a bulk of his 67 yards coming after the run, coming after first contact.
Right.
A really all-around, really solid game from him.
Yeah, definitely. And the Packers need more efforts like that on special teams. They've got some issues that need to be cleaned up, Wes. I mean, it's too far in the season now to be seeing these kinds of things where Trevor Davis catches a punt in the end zone and tries to run it out when you easily just take the touchback there, take the ball in the 20-yard line. A couple of blocks in the back on punt returns that wiped out some nice returns by Davis. Now, I will say this. After hearing from Mike McCarthy and special teams coordinator Ron Zook, they really questioned the block in the back penalty on Joe Thomas, which wiped out the 40-yard punt return that Davis had. I went back and looked at it on film, and it really is a highly questionable call, because the bottom line is the Bears defender really slipped to the ground more than anything. And because Joe Thomas was basically behind him when the guy slipped and went down, the referee or the official, whichever one it was, thought it was a block in the back and threw the flag. Yeah. I don't really think Thomas even touched him all that much. So that's one of those rub of the green type of things. I mean, it happens. That being said, the other block in the back that was called later in the game, I believe it was on Lindsey Pipkins, the coaching staff had no qualms about that call. Those are the types of things that cannot happen. And they're happening too often. They're costing the Packers field position, and it's got
to
stop.
Yeah, and I've made the argument, too, a couple times. I mean, this is something that's not exclusive to Green Bay. A lot of NFL teams are dealing with this. Watch any game on Sundays. I would imagine by the end of the year, maybe we'll have some time to look at it. Illegal blocks in the back are going to be up huge, especially on punt returns. But that being said, you have to clean it up. The best special teams units every year are the ones that don't make those type of mistakes, the things that hurt you when it comes to yardage. To be honest with you, and maybe I'm in a small minority here, I actually didn't have a problem with Trevor Davis taking that punt out. I don't think he knew where his feet were, so he wasn't sure whether or not he was going to be in the end zone or not.
Yeah.
That being said, it kind of goes back. I know they've deviated from this a little bit. It kind of goes back to the, you know, keeping your heels on the 10-yard line and knowing where the ball is going to be and when to evade. That probably is one of those that maybe he could have just gotten away from entirely. But in the moment, we've heard it before. I think last year it happened with Chris and Michael. You just take it out and hope for the best. Don't want to do anything to put yourself in a situation where you're taking a safety.
Yeah, well, and I guess I have to disagree with you on that in terms of I think Trevor Davis has to know where he is on the field.
Sure.
And when it comes to a punt, you can just move away. If that ball touches the goal line when it lands,
right,
it's a dead ball. It's a touchback. And really, when you look at things statistically, a 10 to 12 yard punt return is a pretty good return.
Yeah.
So trying to take one out of the end zone when you know you can get to the 20 if you take the touchback, I think the risk reward there is not worth it. And I think Trevor Davis knows better. That being said, another issue the Packers need to get cleaned up is the field goal operation. We saw the bobbled snap at the end of the game. The Packers are looking to basically seal the game, make it a two-score game with a minute to go, go up by 10 points. The bobbled snap and Crosby misses the kick. I mean, the operation was fine for the extra points and the field goals, including a 50-yarder
right
in the fourth quarter earlier, which was a huge kick and a huge moment. But boy, you just can't have a mistake like that with the game on the line.
First and foremost, the Packers don't win that game if it's not for their field goal unit, because Connor Barth and what they were doing in Chicago, there was no hiccups there.
Mm-hmm.
That did become kind of a shootout, and afterwards, Jordy Nelson tipped his cap to both teams for dealing with what they dealt with on that field in those conditions. That being said, that was an opportunity for the Packers to put that final nail in the Bears' coffin.
Yep.
Weren't able to execute on it. Justin Vogel's had a good season. For him coming in as a rookie, he's on pace right now to, I think, reset some of those punting stats that we've seen the last few years. Has been exemplary in that way. I think he's coming and really owned that job. That being said, the other part of that, as we've talked for a number of years, is holding.
Yeah.
Jacob Shum came in last year, late notice, did a really nice job of it. Vogel has to learn from those opportunities, because really, at the end of the day, that operation on those field goals is so important. I think a lot of people take it for granted at times, but it's definitely not a gimme, and you have to be 100% on it.
Yeah, and you know, a tip of the cap to Mason Crosby for just dealing with all the change. We've talked about it, you know, snapper, holder, this and that, all the shuffling around that he's had to deal with as a veteran kicker. He's been a pro through the whole thing.
Yeah, and you look at a lot of the top units in the league, the Packers are one of them for a long time where you have that same core. You really, as Ron Zook likes to say, you can't buy that type of experience.
Yeah, no question about it. With that, we'll throw to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here. Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, a new wrinkle the Packers threw in on offense here against the Chicago Bears. Randall Cobb is a Wildcat quarterback. wasn't overly productive by any means, just a few snaps here and there, but a little bit of a change-up offensively. What'd you think?
Good unscouted look. I actually really was high on it. I know you look at the stats. I think they had like a 6-yard carry out of it. The other two were minimal, but it was something different, and I'll be honest with you, Mike. You and I have been doing inbox here for a long time now. People, like, basically every week are clamoring for Randall Cobb to take a direct snap or for him to play quarterback or something crazy like that.
Right.
Well, you finally got it. So he's accustomed to it. It's something he did quite a bit, actually, at Kentucky with how much he actually ended up throwing the ball for the Wildcats.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought about that.
The Wildcats.
So, yeah, it's something he did admit, you know, it needs work. There's some things they got to shore up. But actually, the one that they had on that read option out of it where he had someone behind him as well, I kind of like that a little bit. It's a little bit different wrinkle, and you don't have to put your quarterback at risk either.
Yeah, that's the one I liked was the one where he had a pitch man, you know, as he went to the left. Now, you know, pitching or even faking a pitch in the rain when the ball's kind of wet, there's definitely some risk there, and you know, we'll see what the conditions are like going forward. But I liked the way that play developed, because you could see the Bears really weren't exactly sure what he was going to do, whereas on the other plays it was kind of obvious that he was running the ball, and the Bears stacked it up pretty well. My question for you is, now that we've seen these three snaps, you know, they were all running plays, one was kind of an option with a pitch man out to the side, are the Packers setting something up where Randall Cobb might throw a pass?
I think that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you put that stuff on film, you get people selling out for stuff, and then you pull the rug out from underneath them. To some extent, I mentioned this in yesterday's show, that's kind of what they did with how much they ran Jamal Williams, and then, lo and behold, Hundley takes one in a short situation, rolls out and finds Rutkowski, who was wide open for days for a 12-yard gain. I'm curious to see if something like that could happen. You don't see it often. I'm trying to think, maybe Tavon Austin did it this year at the Rams, but for the most part, you know, receivers aren't. But Randall Cobb has that ability. So depending on the scenario that they want to go with, it's another way to get the ball in his hands. As Mike McCarthy likes to say, the more times he touches the ball, the better opportunity for plays to be made.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Cobb go both to the right and to the left. He is left-handed.
He is.
So that's one of those things that you wonder if maybe you catch an opponent who doesn't necessarily know that. Now, there was, back in 2011, I believe it was Cobb's rookie season, they did run kind of a double reverse type of thing where Cobb got the ball and was running to his left and did try to throw a pass down the sideline. It was on the road against the Giants. Ball went out of bounds. It was incomplete. So they did try that. Now, that was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'll just be interested to see if something develops from here.
And that's one of the reasons I was really interested in the option when they did that.
Because
it was like he was running with it, and he was still behind the line of scrimmage for a while, and it was to his left side.
He did make a little fake with the pitch, too, to get that 6 year, you know, for that 6 yard gain. So, he was making the defense play that honestly.
I think that was the biggest takeaway for me. I'm not a huge guy in the Wildcat thing. I know they did it for a few years in Miami, but being able to kind of have that variation with the option off it, I think, could be really beneficial for them going forward. It's at least something that teams have to prepare for now.
Yeah, maybe they spend a little extra practice time on it. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, now that Week 10 is entirely in the books with the Carolina Panthers' big convincing victory on Monday Night Football, let's take a look back at maybe what's going on around the league a little bit. I want to start, and I know we've been talking about them for several weeks now, not just because the Packers played them, but the New Orleans Saints.
They're legit.
If I had told you they were going to score 47 points and Drew Brees was not going to throw a touchdown pass, you got to be kidding me! I mean that's as scary and complete as a New Orleans team has looked for a long time.
If Drew Brees, they were going to score 47 points, Drew Brees was not going to throw a touchdown pass, and instead he was going to run for a touchdown. I think is just that the odds on that would have probably been -2500. But that being said, we talked about it early last week too. Sean Payton made a point this offseason to emphasize the running game. Now, it didn't happen while Adrian Peterson was there, but there was a reason why they brought back Mark Ingram a couple seasons ago, and there's a reason why they drafted Alvin Kamara. What they can do with Kamara, I think especially, has been the key to this offense. But defensively, you also can't. You have to be able to recognize what they're doing there as well. That's a much improved defense, and that combination together with them sort of finding a new spark on offense and
yep.
and at least being a little bit more respectable on defense has allowed them to be 7-2 and seven consecutive victories.
Yeah, when you see a dome team go to Buffalo, New yeah. York in the middle of November and put on an offensive show like that,
point.
It's definitely time to take notice if you haven't already. Obviously, the Philadelphia Eagles, still the one team in the NFC and the NFL as a whole with only one loss. Los Angeles Rams right now are on top of the NFC West. And you mentioned it before with what happened with Chaz Green stepping in at left tackle for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Falcons may be getting themselves back on track. They're 5-4, a 6-sack game from Adrian Claiborne, 8 sacks for the Falcons defense overall in a big home victory over the Cowboys. And for all the talk about Ezekiel Elliott finally being suspended for 6 games,
right.
it was the absence of the all-pro left tackle that really was the bigger factor for Dallas.
Yeah, you never know what you have with left tackles until they aren't there. and it's really unfortunate for the Cowboys in this game. I mean, you look at it, Prescott had 176 passing yards, minus 50 on those 8 sacks. So they finished with 128 total passing yards in that contest. That's not going to be the formula for the Cowboys moving forward, especially
definitely
when you don't
not.
Have Zeke Elliott. From the Atlanta's perspective, I think this is the reset button they needed. I talked last week about how important this game was with Carolina kind of, for the most part, finding its footing, still having some rough performances here and there. In New Orleans, the hottest team in the NFL, you can make a case for.
Yep.
Atlanta has to keep themselves in this conversation they did with that performance against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and in the NFC North, the Detroit Lions, also 5-4, along with the Packers, tied for second place after a somewhat shaky, I guess you would say, victory, home victory over the Cleveland Browns, a game that was closer than a lot of people anticipated. And the Minnesota Vikings go on the road, put up 38 points. Their defense gives up 30, but yeah. But the Vikings, Case Keenum, 4 touchdown passes. There's the question whether they go to Teddy Bridgewater or not. I think the Vikings are going to ride the hot hand, aren't they?
I think Case Keenum's the guy you got to run with.
Yeah.
He's too good right now.
Yeah, Minnesota with a 2-game lead in the NFC North. But that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, on Twitter. He's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you next time.